you do that, we sort of look at some of them and say, well, we really need to know that we're different. We really need to make a case on the top. Okay, we will call to order the Wednesday, May 5th edition of the Ways and Means Public Safety Subcommittee. We will continue our recess hearing on House Bill 5014, the Criminal Justice Commission. Obviously, continue May 4th. And we are obviously in a public hearing, and we have some distinguished witnesses here for our questioning today. And we will begin with the address, Mr. Martin, from the governor's office. Thank you for being here, sir.
For the record, Steve Marks, Governor's Senior Policy Advisor, and here today to deal with some issues on your agenda today, and some, I think, remaining from yesterday. And I understand the Governor's staff was specifically called upon to be here to talk about juvenile crime prevention, and we're absent and apologize for that. And we're working with the little state police Oregon State Police Officers Association problem solving. With that, I want to talk and begin a little bit about the Criminal Justice Commission, because I think the Criminal Justice Commission is has a very important central role in the state's public safety. And this was a statute that the governor's office, Department of Justice, and both judiciary committees worked on in 1995 and moved forward in. We understand what the core mission is. We helped create the core mission of the Criminal Justice Commission, and we want to see that long-range comprehensive public safety plan move forward. One of the things that I think is important to recognize is that there's no other central place for this kind of function to occur. Our state public safety agencies tend to have a single mission, the Youth Authority, Department of Corrections, State Police, Department of Justice. We do have Governor's Public Safety Policy and Planning Council, which is meeting right now, actually. It's made up of sort of local law enforcement and district attorneys and others. But there's no official place to produce this kind of plan. We think it's just an enormously important function. We made all the progress we want to know, but can we get some of the help necessary to move that mission forward today? I think yes, and that's what I'm here to ask you for, and I know it's your concern that that's produced as well. So with that, I just want to just say that one of the things about this is the Criminal Justice Commission doesn't have all the same stature as all the other public safety players do as well. And one of the things that I think this committee can be enormously helpful in is making sure that you expect this plan to be produced and that you expect the other agencies to be at the table. And I've worked on that. It's an enormously difficult job, and it's an enormously time-consuming job, and it's also a job that involves resources to make it happen.
Excuse me, Representative Patrick.
Mark, I just had a couple questions for you in line of having the comments and the governor's commitment to the plan. I'd like to know a couple things. One, what's this committee done for the governor's office to produce some kind of policy, because this is supposed to be the policy office? And secondly, I want to know if the governor's office is aware of the work plan that's being proposed that we talked about with them yesterday, in light of what the governor's office pushed for this and other groups, and I want to know, what has the governor done to review the work plan? Is that consistent with what we're trying to do? And the answer was, I'm trying to get answers to those questions. That's what we were asking about yesterday.
Representative Patrick, I haven't, I think, specifically talked about the work plan with Phil, but what I understand is it's not inconsistent, I think, with what we're asking. We want to focus in production a long-range comprehensive plan, and we want that core mission to succeed, where you look at bringing forth that data in the system to make sure that we have that coordination. If that's the plan you're looking for, if that's what you're asking, and do we support that, the answer is absolutely yes.
But I guess as a follow-up,
what
has the commission produced that's helpful to state policy on behalf of the government? I mean,
yeah.
I understand they're looking at the sentencing guidelines stuff and collecting that data, but what I'm asking for is if there's no policy directive coming out, if so, why not? And then, why should we fund them if there's nothing coming out?
And
the government didn't put any additional money in here except the juvenile piece in here for them to do any kind of other job. So that's what I'm trying to
understand.
The
Criminal Justice Commission routinely reviews all of the criminal justice policies that we look at. Usually we pass the commission on some of the more difficult things, for instance, analysis around all of the complete package of funding legislation. I know that's a sentencing issue, but it's also a budgetary issue where it has a very critical role in helping us ensure that as legislation flows through here, that we make sure we have a budget to play for it, that we have the forecast in place, and then we can hold the process and ourselves accountable for paying for those public safety obligations. In fact, that's a part of the work that we're currently looking at now is what are the impact of all of the public safety legislation on the budget, and essentially that's something that the commission has been working on. The commission itself has worked on a plan. I think that there is adequate funding. I think the real issue isn't funding. I don't think it's financing. I think it's about having the stature of the public safety mission, public safety circle, to pull this very difficult mission off. And I think that if you provide that direction from this committee and that help, I think that'll help get the job more fully down the road. If the superintendent of state police has to describe for you his participation with the commission, that's an important function, just as it would be for the youth authority director or any of those core agencies. So I don't think it's a requirement to have more money. I think it's a requirement that we make sure that we create this and the expectation that this will be a central place for this long-range policy to be produced.
Thanks, Chairman. Follow up on that, Steve, that the representative was just asking. I guess I would somewhat take the exception to the fact for more money. We heard the presentation yesterday that this agency is given greater responsibility each legislative session to develop criteria, either sentencing, juvenile justice, and all these variety of things. But the staffing level has not increased commensurate with the obligations that have what it's placed on is to try to prioritize it rather than responding with strong information. They've had to prioritize which is the most essential, which is the next essential and down. And I know we're prepared to adopt language in the budget as far as the budget, not directing other state agencies to participate, but it would be of a greater assistance if the governor, by executive order, directed state agency has to participate by a statutory requirement. Statutory requirements are already on the books that require the state police and the Justice Department and everybody to participate. Why not bring that census building somewhat to a head and say, by executive order, we're going to make sure everybody's coordinating, communicating. And that, I think, we can honestly say we can glean the facts and proceed from there. So I guess what I'm asking is, since we're a budget-driven committee, not a policy-driven committee as such, we have to look at not crossing that fine line. We can adopt the budget note, but it's going to take a joint partnership with the governor's office to send the signal to the agency as we not only want, but we demand their participation.
Chairman, Senator Hannon, I couldn't agree with you more that the governor's office has a strong role in making sure those agencies are coordinated, and I'm not sure an executive order, given we have a statute, is what's necessary, but certainly with the interest in this committee and producing this plan, I think it'll help ensure that we do the necessary follow-up to make sure that this plan is produced in a way that provides us all with that kind of data and information we want to make public safety decisions for the state of Oregon. The Public Safety Policy and Planning Council, which also comprises some of the local partners, is also very important to that effort and intend to go right up. And I told them I was here to talk about this, that we would have some further discussions about intensifying our focus around helping the Criminal Justice Commission complete its comprehensive long-range plan. I just want to say the chair of the commission isn't here. I believe he was going to be at the policy meeting today, and I asked him to come down if he was, if were available, and that's Dale Penn, and there's no one who thinks it is more important than the chair, Dale Penn, and has been working very hard to move it forward, but I think we've seen it as a developmental evolutionary process, and I don't believe it is all resource-related that we don't have a plan. I do think there's a legitimate concern when we add functions to the Criminal Justice Commission that detract from its core mission, its core staff to accomplish that. To the extent that, and I know that occurred at least one instance with one physician or researcher last session, and I would ask this committee if that were, if they have any concerns about that, let's make sure that that doesn't happen this time. The commission is adequately funded to your level of satisfaction and ours.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Patrick was speaking. I'm looking at the statute right now, and we went to it yesterday, and you know, and it says capacity utilization and type of state and local prisons and jail facilities, and I think they do some of that in terms of the data gathering. But I haven't heard anything about the implementations of their community corrections program, the alternatives to uses of prisons and jail facilities, the appropriate use of existing facilities and the programs. Whether additional or different facilities and programs are necessary, methods of assessing effectiveness of juvenile adult correction programs, devices, sanctions in reducing future criminal conduct by juveniles and adult offenders, methods of reducing the risk of the future criminal conduct, and those are the primary duties, and then the other duties are about the collection point for data, and that's an important function, and I would agree with Dale Penn and the governor's office that these are important things, but I'm just wondering, in terms of where we're going with this, how do we stay on the right path? What makes it justify its existence?
Chairman, Representative Patrick, I think the fact that we recognize that we need that information, that you want it as well as us, and that we're making a renewed commitment to pursue that. You got to remember one thing. When this commission was created, it was an environment of the passage of Ballot Measure 11, and we dealt with a corrections budget that was in crisis for a whole session. We created a new commission to begin to look at those alternatives, and I would say that it took us most of that buy-in just to get the commission appointed up and running. It had essentially a two-year period to come into a staff function that I think is relatively complete now, and that this budget, I think, with the balance and the focus, will allow us to really pursue the long-range comprehensive plan. I don't think that is unreasonable that they haven't produced it all. It's an enormous job, but I think it can be done, and I think the focus on those specific issues that are in the plan can be accomplished, and with your help, and with this commitment to make sure we have a focus, I think we can get to those issues. So the commission reports to the legislature, and perhaps in an interim step on this, how we're making progress specifically to the issues of concern to you that are delineated in the statute.
Okay. One quick follow-up then. 137-61. I'll give it to you, please. About the agency, it's about requiring other agencies to cooperate with those agencies. The governor has the control over those other agencies. Is the governor willing? I need to have some confidence as I move forward with this agency budget to go about their statutory mission that the governor's office is willing to allocate the resources that are necessary for this, and from our other agencies, for this commission to do a statutorily mandated job to move forward, because I don't want to sit here next time and get the feeling that we didn't have the staff or the other people to do it. And the governor has requested funding at one level, and you know what the funding is from the other departments and agencies. And I just want to make sure that those other agencies' funding levels would also include this help to the commission so that this can be done. I don't, maybe Senator Hannah brought it up. I don't know. This is, I haven't seen a statute like this that says that, you know, that they, you know, that they shall cooperate to get this stuff done. And I want to make sure that there's a commitment from the middle office to get this stuff done.
Patrick, I can tell you we have a very strong commitment to get that done. It's a high priority for the governor. There's been, I think, if you look at his public safety policy, I know you're familiar with it, he's been strong on looking at crime group prevention, alternatives to extensive incarceration, and we will continue to pursue those policies and the coordination necessary to do that. And I would just invite you, Representative, to come to the Public Safety Coordinating Council meeting and see the work being done there. And also, I tell you that we have a state public safety team, and we meet routinely every other Wednesday, and I'd also welcome you to come and discuss with them directly this legislature's enthusiasm for the completion of this mission. But we think that'd be a help. We'll give you our commitment to follow through and to begin to delineate that comprehensive plan in the form that the legislature expects to see.
Sure. Representative Hannon was
next. Okay. Thank you.
If you come back, we'll willingly, you know, accept Senator Hannon.
Steve, one thing that still concerns me a great deal is that a new function is being added to the commission. Juvenile justice. And one of the things that we discovered in the budget presentation yesterday was you have all these statutory charges, and it's kind of like the field kit. But what do those statutory charges mean versus the budget to hire the proper staff and list to glean that information out? As an example, the $20 million, as I understand it, from the governor's office for the juvenile justice program, how much is that actually take from there and give to the commission to monitor some of the juvenile justice programs? Do you have an idea?
The staff function for the Juvenile Crime Prevention Advisory Committee is contained in the funding within the Juvenile Crime Prevention Act. We have administration built into that. It doesn't come out of the General Commission's so we didn't want to cross over most of that $20 million in Phil's budget and $10 million in the Youth Authority budget is committed to grants to the 36 local juvenile crime prevention.
Because when we looked at this yesterday, there were 11.50 FTE. And if you look at the statutory requirement, and you look at the, well, they're operating currently under a 6 FTE, and you look at what they're trying to achieve with 6 people versus what the statutory requirement is, it's no wonder that we don't really have a source of information, because maybe they're only study one issue or two issues during the interim period. My concern is, we created this, it used to be the Criminal Justice Council, now it's the Criminal Justice Commission. And we've given additional responsibilities, but I'm not sure if we've been as interested in giving the proper staff to carry out the statutory mandates that require them to do certain things. So, getting back to the representative from Medford's question, I think his question is a very legitimate one. What assurances do we have that if we go ahead and approve request here that it isn't somehow going to be for the next 2 years business as usual. And we meet back here in 2 years and we say, what have you been able to do in the last 2 years? And Mr. Lemon or whoever is here and says, well, we'd like to do more, but we can't because we're limited with our staff. And then is that going to create another legislature in 2001 sitting here saying, well, maybe it's time to abolish this agency? That's what I don't want to get to. I want to be in a proactive rather than a reactive. And right now, I feel like we're being reactive with only 2 years of existence and not enough money to adequately do the job.
Chair, Senator, I could, you know, I agree. This budget, I think, was committed. It was built on a shoestring when we first created it. There's no question about that. I don't think for the core function, though, I think our budget as proposed by the governor is adequate to come back with a framework of the long-range comprehensive plan that provides substantial progress. It gives us a roadmap to what we may need to yet accomplish and what we may not need to do, but I think we'll have some substantive in front of you that you can sink your teeth into in terms of what's necessary to coordinate public safety policy. What investments do we need to make in continuing coordination, including, and I know Representative Patrick has been interested in the public safety information system. I think it's a little early for that, but I think this kind of body is the exact place we need to be advancing that consistent work. And I think we can, within budget, come to you with a comprehensive plan, at least framework that you can clear to all the pieces, the recommendations, and the steps we need to take to continue this plan. I would say that we can also bring some substantial quality to that plan because, for instance, Department of Corrections, and you haven't had their budget up yet, it'll be up. But you'll see they have a long-range plan for building facilities, so we'll begin to be able to fold those things together. It's not that there hasn't been any planning going on, it's just that I don't think we pulled it together adequately in a comprehensive single plan, and I think we can do it with the budget if we make sure that those other necessary things, the core mission, are funded. And I would just add that you have today on your agenda 2433. There's a $180 million request to carry out a vital function to finish the work on the traffic stop legislation. It's a very high priority for the public safety community. And I think this is an example of the kind of thing that needs to be funded so it doesn't detract from the mission so that we can complete the work on traffic stops. And Marla Ray is here to talk about that further. But I would just say that that was developed and finalized after we concluded our budget. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here asking you and advocating and supporting that today. When we do, the governor's office, the governor does support that funding. There's a high priority for the chief and for our sheriff, and we'd like to be able to do that and move forward with this budget.
Would you like to amend the record, Mr. Marks, and indicate that it's $180,000, not $180,000?
Excuse me. Yeah.
I would. You know,
Senator Chance. Thank you. Steve, you've got 20 million here, and of course it's something to the council. And it's getting to the point, you know, we looked at the Oregon plan, which was that thick, and I know that's a little off the subject. It's getting to the point that we have so much coming out of the governor's office, we don't have the people, the time, to put these things together. It's overwhelming. Creating another department of state government. If I ever thought I'd come to this place and have to create another department, I wouldn't have been very proud of it. Because we're going to do that this session because of the Oregon plan and the same deal. Here we have here $20 million for a program that I guess will be implemented by Senate Bill 555. I don't know how much time they spent on it, but it's a sizable amount of money. And I'm nervous that we keep enlarging the system to the point
where for people in ways and means,
you're overwhelmed.
And
I don't think that's the purpose of the governor. I think all of us have the same purpose. We want to make it a better state and what have you. But if people don't have the time to look things over, if they should be looked over,
and many ways and means people do a great job, some don't care that much.
And it just gets to the point where here's something new, again, juvenile justice system that comes through the Juvenile Justice Commission, the Criminal Justice Commission, $20 million. Now, if we do this, and I've looked at through the county report just briefly to get an idea, and the number one thing is detention. In most of the reports. Is that correct?
Sections, I believe, comprises over a third of the $30 million, over $10 million.
Has to do with detention. Is that part of the 20 or the other 10?
The detention portion was budgeted with the youth authority, and the 20 here was intended to be entirely for prevention. What we found as we went through this planning process is that there was a greater attention need. And instead of being rigid and inflexible, we allowed waivers of addition above a policy that said you could apply one-third to basic services. We allowed that to be waived downward so that if it was necessary in a local jurisdiction, they could extend more funding from basic services. It would be the long-range intention to move that back and move this program into prevention and not into detention. But as you know, there are needs out there around detention, and it is a part of the system that's vitally important.
Okay. Now, if we do that in detention, wouldn't we have the possibility then of reducing the OYA budget to a degree because we'd have those detention beds out there that would take some of the load off OYA?
Chairman, to some extent that's true, but we could house those people at the state if we had a policy to do that. I don't think that would be a good policy. I think we want to keep these particular kind of offenders locally, and we think that with the diversion planning, with the diversion funds, there's also $8 million in diversion funds in the Youth Authority budget, which would be very similar to the Sacred Services grant we've been talking about. We think there is a significant opportunity on the local level to manage these kids more quickly, and particularly those that are not the Measure 11 offenders. We think it's vitally important, though, that you don't eliminate $20 million effort that's not, part of its way down or in detention. You don't eliminate that effort because that's where we'll reduce our expenditure costs. If we can keep those kids from piercing the even the local detention or the youth authority system, that's what provides us the savings in the system. So you take the $20 million away and just put it in detention, we'll just keep spending more on detention and we'll spend more on the Oregon Youth Authority. Just want to make it very strong. We're doing detention. We're not doing anything for this category of high-risk juveniles that are 12 to 18 years old that are in our school system. That's what there's a lack of service. And that's the focus we put on. We're not saying this is the only place where prevention needs to occur. We think it's a continuum from 0 all the way to 18. And the proposal in 555 really does address the whole continuum of planning. Instead of you have plans, I guess, Mr. Chairman, I'd say you have plans on the shelf here. You have 36 good plans. If you look at them, it is necessary for this state. I think if you look for public safety issues we have, it's hard to disagree that there's a public safety need that is vital right here. We put more officers in the state police. We put more money into corrections. This is one of the only primary crime prevention investments we're making and being proposed. And we think it's just vitally important that we move forward and step forward with that and see if we can have an impact. If we can't have an impact over time, the measurements, we can change it, and we're evaluating this. I just want to really make a strong pitch that this isn't unnecessary funding. You can't just spend it over here on one part of this continuum and have the benefit of reducing the impacts in our system. We think you got to spread it out. We think this is contained around a focused population. We hope it's adequate, and if there were investments needed otherwise along the continuum, we'll work with you to make those investments. But this is a program that's sort of, I guess, on the shelf, ready to go. We got good agreement around it. I think it's fundamentally good policy. It's not the only policy we need to deal with all the problems of our youth, in particular our children. That was a bit long-winded, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it.
Well, the point is, though, there's 20 million in 10, and the 10 basically, now correct me if I'm wrong, so I better understand this. The 10 million is for detention and could be used in that area. That's the county 36 programs that we got. The 20 we're looking at here is for juvenile prevention, and let's see if I can disagree with that. But we hope it does some good, or we can spend the money on it. But, you know, it's an incremental type thing we're looking at here, and that relates, does the $20 million relate to Senate Bill 555?
Yes, it does, as does the 10, and that basics
for the
Mr. Chair and Senator Timms, I just want to make it clear that the $10 million is not all detention. That would apply to shelter and aftercare and other services. So, diversion, which means you don't come into the door, we keep you out, and those funds, what we're trying to do here is not create another bureaucracy, to put it as simple there. What we're trying to do is coordinate all of that funding we have in various places and bring it to bear through one county plan, because the counties are going to spend Rich Hill's diversion funds. That's $8 million that exists there. That's in the CSL budget. Then we're going to brought this basic service grant into the negotiation and discussion about the needs for youth, and we put that in the youth authority budget as well. We think we need some primary prevention, and we didn't want this money characterized more with the incarceration detention side, so we placed it with the Criminal Justice Commission, but we wanted it spent around high-risk youth, and we created a commission, not a new department, a commission to just evaluate these plans for us, and one staff member, basically, one staff to take a look at those plans, collate them, make sure they're coordinated with other agencies that have responsibility for parts of juvenile crime prevention, and to deliver these to local level in one package. So what may be a bit more tangential and complex in terms of coordination at the state level gets simpler on the local level, because at least we bring the package of funding together through one plan that we make them have. So I'll readily admit, it's very hard to get these coordination lines. We're not creating a new agency saying, this is the agency responsible for prevention, we're going to fund it, it's all going to be here. It's easy to separate those things as things that way, but we're not trying to do that. What we're trying to do is take different parts of the budget that are related to this and bring them together in a coordinated fashion. It's the same kind of effort. It's all around the same plan. It's the same, it's a similar effort, and it's not always hard to make that clear on the first run-through, but I think as you put it in place, you can see how it works. You see who's responsible for the decision-making at the various levels, and hopefully you'll be able to say, not just what we're doing here with juvenile crime prevention, we also have in 555 the alcohol and drug plan and $20 million, and I know we're going to be discussing all these budgets later as well. Coming through, and then you have the childhood system portion of planning to come into place. And what we're trying to do is make sure there's a responsibility to show how all those pieces link up on the local level as part of their local comprehensive plan. And I think what we're beginning to build here, to give us this opportunity, is this framework to make sure that we have a local comprehensive plan on the local level that we call it pieces, but also has a state government that's responsive and delivers money to that local plan in the way that they need it. That's what we're trying to get, and I wouldn't say that we have all the answers, but I think we have a framework that begins to put you in a position to do that, and we certainly are going to measure and evaluate the system, and we would welcome all the oversight necessary to make it occur.
I don't want to leave anyone's questions unanswered, but I don't think it's any secret, either to the governor's office or this committee, that the juvenile crime prevention program, however it's structured or whatever framework it takes, is not going to be contained within the on the Criminal Justice Commission. So what I want to do here today is concentrate on the existing part of their budget, what we can and can't do within it. Unless, Steve, you have any other remarks you want to make with regard to 555 or but I do want to stress, and I think it's the appetite of this committee, is that we are very concerned. We like the fundamental charge of the commission and what the genesis of its being was, functionally producing a long-range coordinated plan for the criminal justice system. We don't see them doing that. We find it very interesting that within their policy package requests that were granted by the governor's office, there was not one policy package addressed at their primary duty. Now, we understand that there are a myriad of reasons for that. Mr. Lemon, or whoever the director, and I don't mean that in a... the director's charge is an extremely difficult responsibility. And we need help. He needs help. A large part of this directive has to come from the executive branch. I mean, many of these agencies, you know, work for your boss. And some of the others are beholden to us. Together, we've got to do this, Steve. And I appreciate your commitment to that.
I'm pleased that the committee's taking an interest in making that happen, and we'll do everything we can to come back to you once you approve this budget, with 2 years with a plan that moves us down the road, and really do appreciate the sentiment and the timely effort. I would just ask another matter, and I know you want to move along, that I think it's important at some point that we understand how Senate Bill 555 is going to be dealt with down here, and there's no cards on the table. We've got a huge budget reconciliation between executive and legislative branch coming up. I think it would be helpful to at least look at how we might deal with that bill when it comes to Ways and Means, because there's just a lot of uncertainty. It creates a real difficulty, I guess, with the interest and how this process is working here. And, you know, when we don't have the answers, we keep sending them down. I think if we just had some expectation that would be dealt with in some fashion, that would help, I think, alleviate a lot of anxiety. That, not that we're going to get all the funding, but it's all going to be there, but that we're going to have a place to discuss it.
I can assure you that, assuming 555 gets to this committee, you will have an invitation, not gold-plated, but a personal invitation to be here. And we will all spend a great deal of time on that, because it's extraordinarily important. And we obviously appreciate your more than passing interest in that. Thank you.
With that, we'll move the executive director's presentation of the budget. Mr. Lennon.
Chair, I do have Phil Lemon from the Criminal Justice Commission. I do just have a couple quick points, but before I get into those, I did want to put a cap on a previous discussion, and I don't want to leave the impression with this committee that other state agencies have not been cooperating with the commission. And how I would characterize this discussion is the committee would like the commission to be a little more aggressive and assertive in seeking assistance and making sure that other state agencies know that it's a high priority for this committee and the legislature as well. So I didn't want to leave you with any mistaken impression that we had asked for assistance and then declined or rebuffed in some way.
We will have to redo this budget note to direct you to ask more frequently than if they've been so forthcoming. Don't go into that deep water.
Just to close up a couple points from yesterday, there is another piece of policy legislation that I believe will be coming to the Ways and Means Committee that does have a potential fiscal impact for the Commission. That is House Bill 2535, which is one of the, I guess, omnibus firearms pieces of legislation that's floating around the building. The latest draft does direct the Commission to review other states' laws regarding concealed weapons permits to see if they are in compliance with Oregon, so that Oregon can recognize the validity of other state concealed weapons permits for those residents who are here. So I just wanted to flag that as another possible additional duty that's floating around. yesterday we talked about the two types of federal grants that are in the commission's budget. One is the Statistical Analysis Center budget, which is a $50,000 annual grant. The other is the Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee grant, which is about $3.5 million, which is part of the juvenile crime package that will be moved out. I did just want to mention, though, that there is a reorganization plan from the Department of Justice to Congress that may start mixing and matching those funds, and that there is at least a possibility that some of that money will become more flexible, fewer limitations, but also less directed. It may involve some cuts. We don't really know at this point. But I did want to make you aware of that. And to give an example, just in next year's appropriation under the JJAC grants, the Juvenile Crime Prevention grants, there are actually three different pots of money that come to that, and pending legislation in Congress would reduce the amount that we can use from that in administration. And while they increase the amount of money that the state would get, they shrink the amount that we could use for administration. So we're keeping tabs on that, but I did want to flag that for you. Other than that, I had not planned on talking about the budget portion relating to the juvenile crime prevention and the staffing there, unless you want to go into that. So I think really the only thing left is to briefly go through the proposed reduction from the governor's revised budget. The governor's revised budget proposes a $18,000 in cuts, which is 2.5%. One is a $15,000 fund shift. In the Measure 11 grant, we had originally anticipated that a third party would not only conduct focus groups in that study, but also do most of the organization and coordination of the grant activities. That third party was the one that the legislature directed not be addressed in this grant, and so we are shifting funds.
Oh, Phil, yes. Where are you?
I don't have this. I'm sorry, I'm working off my notes and not a...
But if you can get it from the DAS, the DAS presentation will have it. Okay. That's page 3.
Did your handout have some reference to those yesterday? I think your PowerPoint slides may have. That's what they were.
Yeah, I believe it's page 14 on the packet that I sent out yesterday.
You have that packet, page 14 on the table.
Two pages from the end. I apologize for not having page numbers on the end.
Proposed budget cuts.
Proposed budget cuts, yeah.
Go ahead, ready to go.
Yeah. A 4% cut would be about $28,500. The governor has approved a 2.5% cut, which is $18,000. That comes from two sources. One is a $15,000 fund shift from the Measure 11 grant to replace general fund personal services. Again, when the legislature approved that grant, it eliminated the third party that we had anticipated doing most of the grant administration and program coordination. So because the commission is assuming an increased role in that, we're taking some of that money and can do that shift. The second is a $3,000 fund shift, this time from the Statistical Analysis Center grant, federal grant, to acquire one of the personal computers that we originally had in the technology package in the base budget. and if the committee wants to go up to the full 4%, it basically involves shifting additional money from the Statistical Analysis Center grant to replace general funds, and the net effect of that would be to lose some of the contract assistance capacity for professional services that we would like to have available in case we are asked to analyze the fiscal impact of another crime-related ballot measure. We used that money last time for analysis of ballot measure 61, the major crimes legislation, and we anticipate that there will be one or more referrals or initiative measures on the ballot that will require that kind of analysis. There have been measures filed to legalize many aspects of marijuana use and production, to repeal measure 11, and also to require a child abuse felony charge before a child can be removed from the home. And so each of those would have criminal justice impacts we likely would be asked to assist in estimating. So the governor has recommended a 2.5% cut, and the additional cut would, again, involve more of a federal fund shift and capacity.
It should.
So
how many contract assistance contracts is this? Yeah, how many people are you using on? Are these like 90-day contracts or?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, the contract that we did for Measure 61 was about a 90-day contract. That was at a time when we had I had a vacant position and not had a research analyst who was even available to do that work. And so we issued a contract that, in conjunction with an advisory group and under our supervision, did the actual methodology to estimate the impact of that. And that was about a 4,000 prison bed impact over 10 years.
Okay.
So that can get very substantial.
But the requirement is there that you need the funds without the reductions so you can maintain that contract level. Is that the issue you're trying to make?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, that's correct. Four of my six staff have been there less than 2 years, including both of my research analysts, and if we get a complicated measure, we're going to need help to do a good job estimating the impact.
Okay. Are you done, Senator? Representative Patrick.
Sure. Well, I understand that, and you and I have talked on several different things that are moving through the building about bed forecast. Does staff just choose not to do that role? Are you in a better position to do that? I'm trying to, it seems like a lot, staff does the forecast and you guys come do the interim types of forecast, and we talked a little bit about your ability to talk to local sheriffs and judges and those kinds of things, but I'm just wondering where this needs to go, who needs to be doing it. I don't care if it's somewhat of a draft that you could provide, but it seems like there's some overlap.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, prior to 95 when the council was working, both the impact estimates and the prison population forecast were with the Criminal Justice Council. I don't know how to say this politely, the accuracy of some of the prison population forecasts were questioned. And so the decision in the same legislation that created the commission was to transfer that responsibility to DAS and to more or less centralize all the forecasting functions, whether it's population, revenue, prison population. In addition, they established by executive order an advisory committee of chiefs, sheriffs, judges, district attorneys, too. So there is input. The governor's office issued an executive order creating an advisory committee to the prison population forecasting function.
For DAS.
And so, obviously, the critical part of any kind of estimates or forecasting is not only the methodology used, but the assumptions that go into it. And so that there was no formal process when that function was at the council to provide that kind of input. And so that is a formal part. There's a technical advisory committee as well as a policy advisory committee that the law enforcement public safety folks. The distinction between that forecasting and the estimating that we do primarily is that theirs is based strictly on current law. We do not look at potential legislative changes other than to note those in the forecast. In addition, they update their forecast twice a year, once every 6 months, whereas what we do is much more rough cut. We rely more on our sentencing guidelines data, which is in some cases better to use. We also have access to the DOC data. And we are doing, I believe, between 50 and 60 of those. And in order to develop the estimates that we do, we try to isolate what the impacts are. We go out and ask, rather than rely on an advisory committee that would basically have to be meeting constantly. We harass district attorneys and judges all over the state to try to figure out if they get this new authority, what would they do. So it's a less formal, less rigorous methodological, but it's also, I think, quite frankly, one of the main concerns that DAS would have is they want to stay out of the politics of estimating the impact of proposed legislation. And I think it's probably wise for them to do that because it does allow them to focus strictly on current law and not have to make a lot of estimates. Now, when the legislature does pass sentencing legislation, they take what we have done and incorporate that in the forecast with that technical, with the advisory committee.
This is a follow-up, but I just want to make sure that there's nothing to prevent DAS from doing, I mean, they have some people who are doing the same kinds of things that you are, it appears. So I'm just trying to, whether it's politically prudent or not, I guess, we need to make that decision on who we're going to rely upon. But there's nothing to prevent that. And I'm looking at this 137-650 ordering all these other agencies to cooperate with you to come up with your data. And I'm just asking this, can DAS not do it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pappage, they have one FTE research analyst to do that. And all she does is study intakes, releases, arrest patterns, and really I think that is a very full-time job. And so if you're going to have staff to do that function, you're going to have to move bodies or add bodies somewhere along in that process to let them do that, in addition to the other policy questions. Because pretty much all we do during the legislative session in the office is to respond to the policy and fiscal estimates of legislation that's working around here, as well as our budget things. Because it's pretty much a put everything else on hold for 6 months while you folks are in town.
Proceed.
That's the only other information I had prepared, Mr. Chair, unless you have other questions. I think pretty much covered them.
Well,
we can open that door.
Yeah. We'll let President Schrader have his turn.
Patrick is going to the back of the line.
I had an opportunity, after I found the county plan office, to review that a little bit. And, just a couple of little concerns. I wonder if maybe I missed these aspects, but I assume that at some point it's anticipated that each of the counties are pretty prescriptive as far as the types of outcomes they want to see for the most part, what this plan gets us. So I assume then it would be your role to tell the legislature next session, did they meet their goals or did they not? And therefore we would evaluate the efficacy of the measures they're proposing to deal with juvenile crime.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, that's correct. We, the role that the JCPAC had and my staff had in working with them is to make sure that every county had quantifiable, measurable outcomes that we can use. And so when they say we want to run this program, that we will be able to tell whether that program had either direct effect on reduction in arrest rates or at least in reducing the risk factors that add up to predict arrest rates. And so what we will do on an individual basis, on a county basis, and then aggregate into a statewide basis is be able to come back and tell you what that money has purchased in terms of improvements in the risk factors and in changes in the arrest rate.
Follow-up that you were leading into a little bit. I didn't see in the county plans, particularly where they were targeting that 35% that was mentioned in the earlier presentation you guys did as being the big problems. In some of the counties, my county, for instance, it was looking at a lot of preventative stuff, which is nice. I mean, pre-offenders or people not in the system. But I kind of got a mixed message from the presentation that, even 65% of those that do offend are not going to reoffend. Shouldn't we be targeting, or shouldn't a substantial portion of each county's plan be targeted towards that 35%?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, I assume what you're referring to is the recidivism study that was presented in the Youth Authority. Counties are aware of that, and the high-risk population was not defined as, we're not trying to necessarily prevent recidivism. We're trying to prevent juvenile crime. and so we did not focus specifically on that piece of the high-risk population that has already committed a crime and is likely to go on and continue committing. I think that depending on the plan you look at, that was a local choice that was made, and some counties are spending a substantial amount of their resources on specifically on that high-risk to recidivate population. But if you want to look at arrests and crimes generally, even if you only commit one, a lot of counties, you're going to be incurring costs, creating victims, even if it is just that first one or if it's the fifth one or whatever. So that was a local choice by the counties. And again, what we wanted to do is make sure that there was some connection with the arrest rate. And from my personal experience, I went over to Polk County and met with their planning group, and I was very pleased to see that in addition to the Children's, Families, and Juvenile Department, there were three law enforcement agencies represented, two chiefs and a lieutenant or a captain from Salem Police Department. And their plan is very prevention-oriented. There's not a lot of the basic services that Senator Timms was talking about. And I looked at those three law enforcement officers, and I said, are these the kids that you're going to be dealing with if we don't spend the money this way? And they said, absolutely, yes. We love this plan. And so if the cops say it's going to keep those kids out of their off their doorsteps and out of their cars and out of their detention centers, I think that's exactly what we want this money to do.
Any other questions for Phil?
Let's do it now before.
Let's hear from Marla. Marlon Dale, if you want to come up, present on 24 or 33, and then we'll go into a work session on this budget. Maybe if we have a quorum.
Chair Westland,
15 minutes.
Chair Westland, members of the committee, my name is Marla Ray. I'm here this afternoon as coordinator of the work group on the implementation of House Bill 2433. The work group was formed under the auspices of the Governor's Public Safety Planning and Policy Council. I think you heard Mr. Marsh made reference to that council in his presentation earlier this afternoon. I've handed to your committee staff, and you have before you, an abbreviated version of the report that was required to be filed with the Oregon Legislature on March 1st. This report very briefly summarizes our work over the last few months, the last actually year and few months. After the legislature passed House Bill 2433, which affected Oregon's stop and frisk laws, one section of that bill required all law enforcement agencies to adopt written policies and also to collect data. Under the commitments made to the legislature when that bill was under consideration, as well as when it was pending before the governor, it was determined that an all-inclusive work group would get together and help decide recommendations for implementation on House Bill 2433. Section 6 was a direct result of concerns expressed to this body that passage of 2433 would have a disparate impact on minorities, individuals of color, particularly when it comes to traffic stops. Our work group, which numbered in 60, and two are here today, actually more than that, because Phil was also a member of our work group in addition to Dale Penn and Dave Fidanke from the American Civil Liberties Union. Representatives included those from the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, representatives of each of the advocacy commissions, Black Affairs, Hispanic Affairs, Asian Affairs, Legislative Commission on Indian Services, chiefs, sheriffs, union officers, so we had a wide representation in a very diverse group. We recommended policies, written policies, a model policy to the law enforcement agencies concerning the prohibition of stopping a person based solely on the officer's perception of the individual's race, color, sex, or national origin. All law enforcement agencies in Oregon have adopted such a policy. We've confirmed that through their respective associations. Some law enforcement agencies had policies in place, and they simply ensured that it complied with the provisions of House Bill 2433. In addition to that, the work group has spent some time on data collection. We focus on three areas: complaints against officers, concerning race-based traffic stops or other discriminatory conduct, a survey of officers and a survey of the general public with a particular emphasis on communities of color, African-American, and Latino. That survey was conducted, and it's very briefly summarized. We can get you the whole packet for those that are interested in that. We did not complete our work on the officer survey and still hope to do that. If you flip to the very end of our report at pages 12 and 13 are the summary and recommendations. Oregon, this is both good news and bad news. Oregon is regarded as a lead state in taking on the issue of what has become known as race-based policing. Both Superintendent Lee Ron Hallen from the Oregon State Police, Chief Charles Moose from the Portland Police Bureau are very involved in national efforts. You may have read recently about their resolution concerning race-based policing. It is regarded as among the first in the nation. We believe that a broader range of actions are necessary beyond the data collection efforts that are underway. We've made a series of recommendations to the Governor's Public Safety Council, which it has endorsed, and you heard from Mr. Marks today that the Governor also supports the funding request for this. But we have a four-part recommendation. Training and education community outreach efforts need to continue. Most of that is through the Board on Public Safety Standards and Training. We hope to be able to pick up where we left off on our survey of police officers and a representative sampling of traffic stops. We wish to pursue that. Our present data collection efforts, although they are limited, it is recommended that they should continue at least for another 2 years. That includes yet another survey of the general public that was grant-funded last time, but expanding that to also include the Asian community. The work group will continue under the auspices of the Governor's Public Safety Council because it is regarded as an effective problem-solving mechanism for those diverse interests getting together. It is recommended that it have some funds for work group facilitation and staffing. All told, the request is for $179,000, and I would be pleased to answer any questions. I was asked to be quick, so I was.
Beautiful. Get this woman some oxygen. Representative Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious about one aspect of this as we're taking a look at them. Concerns about inequities in terms of these stops, and that is whether or not we've looked at the economics as well as the race factors. One of the issues that seems to be connected here is if you have a new immigrant community with lower economic capability and they are purchasing older vehicles that may not be functioning as well, the wipers may not work in the rain, or the turn signals may not work. If there's other factors at work here, it may increase the propensity for stops to have occurred based on equipment. That's on the one side. And on the other side, is there some way of documenting that trend, that is, such as having a certain number of video-equipped police cars, so that every time there's a stop, they're videotaping, well, I'm observing that the person did not use their right turn signal, or that the brake lights aren't working. So we have some objective documentation of the reason for the stop to see if it comports with what the legislative reported.
Chair Westland, Representative Mannix, there are a couple of different responses to your question. The economic conditions of individuals was raised in the public perception survey, in addition to asking individuals their reasons for what they believe were unfair stops, whether it was based on race, color of car, make of car, time of day, those kinds of things. By and large, the concern ended up being more race-based than economic-based. One of the things that we haven't explored in greater detail, obviously, are some of the economic issues more broadly than the public perception of stops.
Interrupt for a moment, separate from this video idea, which you may want to answer. It occurs to me that we do DEQ emission testing in the Portland metropolitan area. And those emission tests are pretty objective one way or another. Has anyone ever done a cross-reference to see whether or not there's a disproportionate failure of owners of cars who are minority groups? And then we'd know, well, the failure is based on an objective test, can't be race-based, but the failure rate may have to do with the age of the vehicle, the economic capability to maintain the vehicle, and then we'd have a little bit of data to tell us whether or not there is something to the notion that people with lesser economic capability, which also tends to be the new, I call it, new immigration populations, it could have been the Irish 100 years ago, will also then be the ones who will be found to have been in violation of some motor vehicle equipment law or safety law. I'm just trying to look for some other objective frame.
And
is there any discussion there?
That there has not been, and that's one that we'll raise with the work group when we reconvene. Two other comments. The superintendent of state police has endorsed the notion of video cameras in patrol cars. Second, in our officer survey, one of the things that we intend to ask to be able to do some cross tabs are the reason for the stop in the first place, and then the result of that stop, but in a way to be able to get to obtain data on the reason for the stop, generally, specifically, either way, cross tab that also or cross compare that with race based information.
Thank you. Very well. Any other questions for Marla at this stage of the game? Representative Schroeder.
Yeah, with the ongoing budget request, what product are we looking for? Are we looking for legislation or a code for law enforcement to work from? Are we looking for just ongoing outreach just going on forever and ever just to keep in touch with ourselves and the community out there?
Representative Schroeder, the work group, when it first began, determined that its purpose and its mission was to ensure that the laws were being fairly evenly enforced. This work group began with the notion that it would make recommendations to law enforcement agencies and to others to do what we could to ensure equal application of the law. Whether that is to say there are race-based stops and they must discontinue, or to say the data or other factors don't support that and we continue to need to do education. It wasn't contemplated at the beginning that this work group would go on in perpetuity. At the conclusion of our work on 2433 in particular, Chief Moose and others, and I think both Dale and Dave Sedanke can speak to this, believed that the work group was unique in what it does, because it is a problem-solving group where you have individuals representing very diverse interests sitting down and working on solving a problem or addressing an issue together. That is why the work group has recommended to the Governor's Public Safety Council, and it has endorsed that, for the work group to continue in some fashion to continue to work together to problem solve.
Sure. So then beyond the request for training and survey and other data, is it conceivable this work group would not need any additional funding? We might assume that it would just be good management among the different law enforcement agencies to proceed as they've had a chance to get together on a formal basis, on an informal basis, so they can coordinate their knowledge base and not get into this particular problem in the future without any additional funds.
That's probably a question better answered by others than myself. I was funded through the state police through a little grant to be the facilitator and the coordinator of the work group. Chief Moose at our meeting was the one who said somebody needs to be in charge of putting it together. The attraction to him and to others on the work group was that it is regarded as a neutral territory, if you will, among agencies that do compete even though they try hard not to.
Thank you. Mm. Representative Kozanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just some follow-up from what Mona Ray said. Part of this was actually came together because of the negotiations in 97 when
we expanded the ability for officers in a stop ask for consent.
Mr. Banky's up there, and he can maybe give a little bit more historical perspective of what happened when they reviewed some stuff from 15 years ago about a phrase called driving off Hispanic and the perceptions there. I think one of the other things is what we've learned from the work group, and I've had the opportunity to sit on some of the meetings, is it is actually allowing these diverse groups with different perceptions and concerns to come to the table to try to address problems and basically open up a new education process for there is, quote unquote, the sensitivity of different cultures. And so the perception and maybe some individuals that all of us preconceived notions of different people's cultures, that you can break down some of those perceptions so the laws are fairly being applied across the board. But if you want to hear about what they demonstrated through the review, I forget the two or three troopers' notes back in 91 or 92, you know that was has perpetuated to some point why this group has been able to come together and I think really work to try to have a unified voice in addressing some of the issues that are out there.
And while to echo Marla's comments that there is no intent that this thing be, you know, funded in perpetuity, I think as it continues to serve a useful purpose, as long as they're not abusive of any responsibilities or enabling legislation, it will probably continue to function. And
Mr. Chair, to show you how incredibly useful it is, you'll notice that Dave Fedanke from the American Civil Liberties Union and Dale Kim from the Oregon District Attorneys Association are here darn near side by side, but for me, my goal in life is to one day exit this, and they're here together without me being in the middle.
My question to you is, being in the middle, what does that make you?
That's so good.
Happy to be here.
Happy, yeah. Represent that.
There's one other aspect that I'd be curious about, and that is not so much a race or economic factor, it's a cultural factor, and you've alluded to that. In my experience living in Latin America for 7 years, you had reason to fear the police, because if you were stopped by a police officer, part of his income was based on the bribe that you had to pay the officer. And that was just part of doing business. And if an officer was stopping you, there was anticipation of the need to pay off the officer. And it's not the same in every country. There's different levels of this, and it's changing, but it's still a factor in some cultural environments. And I wonder if that doesn't create also a perception of apprehension, and whether or not there's some means that can be found to help acquaint folks who are newer to this culture that that is not acceptable conduct in this society, and they should not have to anticipate that when stopped by an officer.
I don't know if that, if you're looking for a response.
I'm looking for some idea as to whether or not this kind of thing is being discussed. That's what I call decultural.
The answer is yes, and that I think is included in our recommendation on the continued training and education and community outreach.
Great. Dale, you want to say anything, or Mr. Fedanke, you want to say a few brief words?
Mr. Chair, Dale Henry, County District Attorney, I'd simply say that I think this process is very good. There were concerns by some people who voted and supported this bill last session that they wanted to have some documentary evidence about what impact this bill would have on the citizens of Oregon. Clearly, this is a national problem and is continuing to get become a bigger national problem, and that's why I'm glad that Oregon has already worked towards looking at perceptions and ways to deal with the issue. And as you see this budget here, it is almost entirely focused on data collection and information from our public. And I think continuing to get that feedback with a little bit of base data, which we were able to obtain in this last year, that will help the legislature make some value choices on whether or not this should continue into the future, if there does need to be any legislative changes, or it seems to be going well. And that's why we think perhaps at least another two-year approach to this would be advisable.
Sure. Mr.
Sedanke.
Mr. Chair, for the record, David Sedanke, Executive Director, ACLU of Oregon. The work group process was, I think, remarkable for everyone involved. Folks from very different perspectives came together, both from law enforcement and from community organizations, civil rights advocates, and others. There were, in a diplomatic sense, very frank discussions in the early meetings, open disagreements, different perspectives. What happened, and in large part it was thanks to the facilitation of Marla Ray, was that everyone agreed eventually to stop arguing about the extent to which there is a problem and agreed to work on what possible solutions would address everyone's concerns, both the needs of law enforcement and the reality and perceptions of people in the civil rights community. And once we got past that hurdle, which frankly most states have not even confronted yet, we quickly saw that there were a few things that could be done to address both public perceptions and the extent to which this is a real problem, that is, people being treated differently because of their race, color, national origin, or cultural background. And it is those issues that we feel the work is unfinished on. There are things that need to be improved in the training process for public safety officers. Without pointing fingers at anyone, there are things that could be done in that process. There are also things that need to be done in terms of public education, letting members of the public have a better understanding of what law enforcement officers are dealing with when they make a traffic stop, why they do the things they do, why they run a record check on every person that they stop for a traffic infraction, these kinds of issues, so that everyone has a better idea of what to expect when they're stopped for a traffic infraction. And so I think the work group has, at this point, moved beyond trying to figure out who's at fault, has moved beyond trying to figure out, is this a real problem or is this just a perceptive, a perceived problem? Everyone has agreed that it's some of each, and that we need to work together to resolve these issues in Oregon. We are much farther ahead than any other state in terms of these issues. Steve Moose from Portland is on a national task force that has been set up by Attorney General Renum, and is pointing to the process that we have in place in Oregon as a model for other states around the country. I think we're doing some very important work, and we very much appreciate your support.
Thank you very much. Do you have a question or a quick question? Make a quick statement.
Chair, I think that the training and the survey of the officers to do more education are important things. I'm concerned about further data collection point. Last legislative session, made a determination to look at it. Surveys and the perceptions do not come back as having a substantial problem. I think the largest problem is, after working law enforcement substantially in the state for 4 years and also being someone of minority descent, I think that it's important that, I don't perceive that there's a problem out there either. I think the media will continue to widen this chasm and be involved in trying to play up these things. I think we need to train the officers. I think we need to make them aware of the stops. I think we can do some more facilitation fees, but I don't know how much more the data collection, from a data collection standpoint, is going to be helpful to do what we can do to
educate the public anymore or do any of those kinds of things. I think those things need to occur at a community level, and I know several communities throughout the state are looking at various ways of doing things, but I'm not sure gathering any data is going to be more fruitful.
Do the panel want to respond?
Mr. Chair, Dale Finn, I believe the information that we got was very helpful and helped give us a good, clear view of what the Oregon public believes and perceives. Our only thought was that that gave us a baseline that we can look at, and it would be helpful at least one more time to view it to make sure that we aren't going the wrong way. And that was why the recommendation was to fund this one more time so that we could feel like we are making progress and demonstrate that progress. But that was the thinking.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
We are going to adjourn the public hearing on House Bill 5014 and tap in the work session on House Bill 5014 and see if we can do a 7-minute work session.
Let's try.
Mr. Weston, the committee members, I handed up to you a packet, and on top of that packet is a cover memo which briefly outlines a memo that has been reviewed with the co-chairs and is consistent with some of the objectives they want to achieve through this budget. If I could go over that quickly with you. The department has identified today in their testimony approximately 4% in reductions that they would have to take to meet the co-chair's 4% reduction target. In negotiating close with them and the co-chairs, the recommendation from LFO is that we reduce the budget $18,000, $15,000 by transferring in a one-time basis the costs associated with about major 11 study that is federally funded from general fund to federal fund for this biennium, and then $3,000 for shipping general funds to federal funds for purchase of a PC that's allowable under the Statistical Analysis Center grant. The remaining reduction options that were talked about today are not within the recommended reductions for reasons I can outline for you if you want to discuss those. And basically, the other one, if you recall, was a fund shift of one of the research positions from 68% to 75% federal funds. With the organization and Congress being considered the basis for this grant, along with the fact that it's a core function of the commission, LFO's recommendation would be that we not further increase our reliance on federal funds. It restricts their ability to use that position in ways that they need to. Additionally, there was another $4,000 reduction that we also are not recommending. It would further reduce their ability to contract for professional services on their referred measures or ballot initiatives that they need to do research on. In total, the other recommendation is to separate out the asset forfeiture expenditure limitation. As the law provides right now, they can only spend up to $50,000 of that. There's a bill pending that would possibly lift that limit. As you recall, as budgets grow, that expenditure limitation would not work. And this biennium, actually, their budget would call for approximately $52,000 to be spent of those funds. So this would separate it out. If the other legislation passes, then they would be able to increase that limitation at the e-board.
I move that we adopt the LFO recommendations as to the figures and finances on this appropriation, plus the proposed budget note. But in the motion, I include a minor change to the budget note, where it says the public defender, we would incur the Department of Justice, meaning the Attorney General's office. Then we continue on, and the judicial branch, I always like branch, in preparing and submitting the policy and plan. Is that one modification I make the motion, Mr. Chairman?
Clarification?
Was that to delete the public defender or
add? After public defender, add the Department of Justice, which is the Attorney General's operation. And then where it says judicial department, change that to judicial branch, just because it makes me feel better.
secretary, co-equal branch of government.
You are our budget note critiquer. Do we need a motion to change the budget note?
No, I incorporated the change in my motion.
You did indeed.
That's fair.
Representative Patridge.
I'm not satisfied, I guess, with the budget note. I'd like to see him provide a work plan to the emergency board rather than just report what their current progress is. I think the problem with this commission is we don't have a clear work plan for where they're going and what they're doing, and have some substantial problems with that in accordance with the statute. And I think that they need to report what their work plan is going to be so we can see some end results.
Final line and give me some changes. In accordance.
So I'd move to amend Representative Manis's motion to say the commission is directed to, instead of report, provide to the emergency board no later than June 2008 work plan. Nobody is for developing a state criminal justice policy and comprehensive long range plan.
Can you say that again?
The commission is directed to provide the emergency board no later than June 2008 work plan for developing a state criminal justice policy and comprehensive long range plan.
So take out report and insert provide.
That's a change.
On its progress to a work.
On its progress in to a work plan for.
Question. Would you want to move that time frame back for presenting a work plan? Because ultimately they were going to do report back on progress approximately around 2000, April 2000, that time being, or June 2000 actually, being a time frame that might work into budget proposals for the next biennium.
Sure. On that point, it says no later than June 2000. I was hoping the work plan, if it's going to be done, would be done in 2 months. And they can still be coming back and delivering the work plan and be halfway through it.
Okay. It's June 2000.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
A year. The true last year of this millennium.
But do we want to have a date for the work plan and then a date for the implementation?
All right, Mr. Chairman, I'd suggest that we then change it to the commission is directed to deliver a work plan to the emergency board no later than December 1999 and to report to the emergency board no later than June 2000 on its progress in developing a state criminal justice policy.
Okay.
On tape, that'll do it if you accept that as a motion to amend.
Representative Kozanski,
can we just get a nod from the executive director that time frame is something that can be worked?
Give us some dates, Phil. I got 1 minute to get this done. If not, who knows what black hole this budget's going into.
Who knows what a work plan is?
Mr. Chairman, Phil Lemon. December, I think, is a little ambitious. We do have to resolve the sentencing guidelines issues, which is a major work issue after the legislative session.
Okay, great.
If we can look at a couple months, it would make me a little more comfortable.
How about January?
End of January?
End of January. End of January. Okay? And then provide the work plan, and then how about the report date?
If another... I'm not sure how much progress we would report in another 5 months, Mr. Chair. I guess I would, I have no objection to that.
December? Well, we are inquiring minds, and we're going to find out how much progress has been made in the next 5 months. Yeah, I want to be very clear. And Dale, I mean, I want you to take this as an empowerment. And Phil, I want you to take this as an empowerment. We are very concerned that you are not being given the capabilities to perform your primary duty and goal. We want you to go out there and get the job done. We want you to come up with a plan to provide a long-term, comprehensive, coordinated justice system in this state, period. So we were mad at you. We just want the job done.
We appreciate your support, Mr. Chair.
And I am here to help you and Dale and Steve, all I can. I'm a nice guy. Since you're in a good mood, Mr. Chair.
Call a question. I have so much goodwill, and I just gave it all out, so.
I had a question before Mr. Gantz.
Well, let's get clear on our budget note here before,
You want to roll it as amended?
As amended.
I had a question on the amendment there.
Okay. As long as you guys can name it, I'm here.
Issue on the ballot measure 11 study, is that the same thing as the sentence guidelines? Different study, right?
Mr. Chair, if I say no. The measure 11 study is federal grant. The sentencing guidelines is an ongoing thing that we do, and is additional duties would be directed by House Bill 2454.
Do everybody report on that ballot measure 11 study, or how does that work?
Mr. Chair, Administrator, yes. At the end of the study period, we will be doing something, and I assume as the results come in, the data will be shared with the Interim Judiciary Committee.
Can we, given the fact, because...
Mr. Chair, no, I'm sorry.
Just real quick. I just had a concern, maybe I'm wrong on the committee, a little concern that we're not getting it out of it. This thing's gone through a little bit of a timeline, and that in the narrative or at some point, there'd be some direction that this study gets completed and is indeed reported to the legislature.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's the entire purpose of doing the study, is to inform the legislative body on what has happened, what we can document, what the perception is in the community as a result of Measure 11. I would have no objection if you formally or informally want to put that somewhere. But
okay, well, if it's on the record, we're going to get it by next session, that's fine.
Yeah, and I think in fairness, partially to your point, I like the end of January to provide the work plan, but what's the committee think of the December e-board, December 2000 e-board for the completion of the work plan?
I agree with that, Mr. Chairman.
That gets us right before the session. We've got time to chew it over a little bit. Many of the people on this committee are going to be working with Phil and Dale and Marlon and everyone along the way. Then we... Obviously, before the session, we're going to have an idea of what it is, and we can implement the thing. But let's put report to the e-board December 2000 on the progress made on work plan. Okay.
I accept all of that as a friendly amendment, Mr. Chairman. So it's all incorporated in the motion to adopt the LFO recommendation. The only thing I would qualify that I didn't mention in the offer recommendation was the removal of the package 201 and 202 limitations, as well as the supplement that was in the governor's revised, just so that those things are going to be addressed separately.
All of that was in the written presentation and it's incorporated in the...
It's only a 2,800% reduction in a budget.
Now you're looking at a budget deal here, aren't you? All right, I'm getting a little lost here with regard to have we performed.
Mr. Chairman, I back up and withdraw the original motion since there's some confusion. I move first that we adopt the LFO recommendations as to the appropriation. That's one. And two, that within that adoption that we incorporate this budget note, which now requires that the commission provide a work plan to the emergency board by the end of January 2000 and a further progress report by December 2000 as to the development of a state criminal justice policy. The rest of it reads in there, and I've already asked for the change about the Department of Justice and the judicial branch.
To be included in the budget. I accept your motion. Any discussion? Any objections? So moved.
Hold on. That gets our budget note taken care of. The financial asset we're done.
We need to move. Good question on. I'm a little
uncomfortable. We passed it out. What I did not hear in your motion was to move it to the full.
I moved to adopt it now. I moved to send it to the full committee.
The due pass.
I moved that we send
the package to the full committee with the two fast recommendations.
And as amended. As amended. That's what I was looking for. Any discussion? Now your question.
I'd like something in the narrative as we talk about this budget about the asset forfeiture recoveries. I mean, that's been a problem here, and I know it's very difficult. We assess money, it's difficult to track, and, you know, we're not sure you get these guys to do what they want to do, but I guess I'd like to see something where the next legislative group that sits here can get some informal discussion or realize this was discussed at this committee, and that we're actually going to be getting, you know, hopefully better results because of the efforts that were made here in the last year and a half, 2 years. And if that's true, then we're all hunky-dory. If not, then the next committee can do what it needs to do to encourage that. I think we can incorporate that in the budget narrative, and we can also invite you to sit in on the public safety and from work groups to make sure that issue is addressed. Representative Patrick.
The only other thing that I'd like to include in the narrative is to look at the, there was concern about the duplication of who's gathering the data regarding the Fed forecasts and those types of items. We've got DOC DAS and Criminal Justice Commission, but that's a concern. I think that that's a legitimate concern, if there's duplication, that's the way we
they are setting these policies, will help them set the policies on the state board and make it public.
I think that falls directly into the category of develop a criminal justice policy and comprehensive long-range plan for a coordinated criminal justice system.
Right.
I think that's what we're here to talk about, and that's their language, not ours.
May I ask one question?
Of course.
Is there anybody from the Attorney General's office here today? No. Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion. We have had some discussion. Any further discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 5014 is moved to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. It carries. I will be the carrier for, this will be the first bill I carry out of this committee. I'm proud to do so. I'll be the carrier in full and on the House on the Senate side. Last person to raise their hand carries it.
There you go, Jenny. You're looking good. Okay. Great. And we are adjourned.
Do you have any closing remarks you want to make real quickly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. We are adjourned.